and then he bade them get the fire lit and stalked out upon his crutch, with his hand on my shoulder, leaving them in a disarray, silenced rather by his volume rather than convinced. "Slow, lad, slow," he said to me. "They might round upon us in a twinkle of an eye if we were seen to hurry." Very deliberately, then, did we advance across the sand to where the doctor awaited us on the other side of the stockade, and as soon as we were within easy speaking distance, Silver stopped. "You'll make a note of this, doctor," says he, "and the boy'll tell you how I saved his life and were deposed for it. You'll please bear in mind it's not my life only now, it's the boy's into the bargain, too. And you'll speak fair, doctor, and give me a bit of hope to go on for the sake of mercy." Silver was a changed man. Once he was out there and had his back to his friends in the blockhouse, his cheeks seemed to have fallen in, his voice trembled. Never was a soul more dead in earnest. "Why, John, you're not afraid?" asked Dr. Livesey. "Doctor, I'm no coward, not I," and he snapped his fingers. "If I was, I wouldn't say it. But I'll own up fairly. I've the shakes upon me for the gallows. You're a good man and true, and you'll not forget what I've done good, not any more than you'll forget the bad, I know. And I step aside, see here, and leave you and Jim alone, and you'll put that down for me, too." So saying, he stepped back a little way till he was out of earshot, and there sat down upon a tree stump and began to whistle, spinning round now and again upon his seat, so as to command a sight, sometimes of me and the doctor, and sometimes of his unruly ruffians, as they went to and fro in the sand between the fire, which they were busily rekindling, and the house, from which they brought forth pork and bread to make breakfast. "So, Jim," said the doctor, sadly, "here you are. As you have brewed, so you shall drink, my boy. Heaven knows I cannot find it in my heart to blame you, but this much I will say. When Captain Smollett was well, you dared not have gone off, and when he was ill and couldn't help it, by George, it was downright cowardly." I will own here that I began to weep. "Doctor," I said, "you might spare me. I have blamed myself enough. My life's forfeit anyway, and I should have been dead by now if Silver hadn't stood for me. And, doctor, believe this, I can die, and I dare say I deserve it, but what I fear is torture. If they came to torture me..." "Jim," the doctor interrupted, and his voice was quite changed. "Jim, I can't have this. Come on over, and we'll run for it." "Doctor," said I passed my word." "I know," he cried. "We can't help that, Jim, now." "No," I replied. "You know right well you wouldn't do the thing yourself. Neither you, nor Squire, nor Captain. And no more will I. Silver trusted me. I passed my word, and back I go. But, doctor, you did not let me finish. If they come to torture me, I might slip a word where the ship is, for I got the ship, part by luck and part by risking, and she lies in the North Inlet on the southern beach, just below high water. At half tide she must be high and dry." "The ship!" exclaimed the doctor. Rapidly I described to him my adventures, and he heard me out in silence. "There is a kind of fate in this," he observed, when I had done. "Every step it's you that saves our lives. And do you suppose by any chance that we're going to let you lose yours? That would be a poor return, my boy. You found out the plot? You found Ben Gunn?" "Oh, and talking of Ben Gunn..." But here the cook drew near again, and he said, "Silver, I'll give you a piece of advice. Don't you be in any great hurry after that treasure." "Why, sir, I do what's possible, which that ain't," said Silver. "I can only, asking your pardon, save my life and the boy's by seeking for that treasure." "Well, Silver," replied the doctor, "if that is so, I'll go one step farther. Look out for squalls when you find it." "Sir," said Silver, "as between man and man, that's too much and too little. What you're after, why you left the blockhouse, why you've given me that there chart, I don't know. And yet I've done your bidding with my eyes shut and never a word of hope. But no, this here's too much. If you won't tell me what you mean plain out, just say so, and I'll leave the helm." "No," said the doctor, musingly, "I've no right to say more. It's not my secret, you see, or I give you my word I'd tell you. But I'll go as far with you as I dare go, and a step beyond. And first I'll give you a bit of hope, Silver. If we both get alive out of this wolf trap, I'll do my best to save you, short of perjury." Silver's face was radiant. "You couldn't say more, I'm sure, sir, if you was my mother," he cried. "Well, that's my first concession," added the doctor. "My second is a piece of advice. Keep the boy close beside you, and when you need help, Hello. I'm off to seek it for you, and that itself will show you if I speak at random. Goodbye, Jim. And Dr. Livesey shook hands with me through the stockade, nodded to Silver, and set off at a brisk pace into the wood.